This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
On Hope 103.2, joining us, Peter Gibbs from iProud. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, this is just lovely. Thank you for your interest.
And I am interested in hearing a bit more about your organisation, but also this interview timing with Reconciliation Week coming up as well. I wanted to get your thoughts on how you think, or how you would describe, the relationship between Australia's First Nations people and our non-Indigenous population. What do you think that looks like at the moment?
Look, we've come a long way, absolutely come a long way, but we've got so far to go. And that's all I'll sort of start off with, to set the scene for what I think is, you know, coming up to an exciting week. We always want to celebrate this week, and then NAIDOC coming up later in the year. This is a time for Australia to just reflect on matters with Aboriginal affairs. It's also for us to understand that we do have a sad history, and unfortunately we're still confronted with many of these issues today. In our current time, we're still dealing with lots of issues that people like William Ferguson and William Cooper, in the past, when they stood on the street corners in the 30s and were advocating for Aboriginal self-determination and for the governments of the day to address the serious issues that impact on Aboriginal people, you know what? In 2021, we're still facing so many of those issues. Mm. But their legacy drives us as community leaders and family leaders, and they help guide us towards that goal that we're all trying to achieve, that in this country, that Aboriginal people will be treated exactly the same as everybody else. And you know what, Laura, this is fundamentally what we're trying to do with our children. When we look them in the eye, we say, you are equal to everybody else. You are not a second-class citizen. And, you know, policy should reflect that, the support that the government provides us and affords us. And we're not just talking to money. We're not just talking funding. And I think that's where it gets lost a lot when we talk about these types of issues. It always goes to the money side of the equation. Mm. What we're talking about, an equality, that you'd see us different and that you'd see us as equals and that we would not be classed as second-class citizens, and you talk to us and not about us. Mm. And just like you and I are doing today in this conversation, you know, it's an equal-level conversation. You don't treat me like I'm something that is not as equal to you. Mm. And the respect that I afford you and you back to me is that, and fundamentally, that's what we're trying to do in our country, even today in 2021.
Is that what you think a truly reconciled Australia would look like, one where everybody is given equal respect and are listened to with equal sort of weight for what's being said?
I'll tell you what, it'll give us a good start. It'll absolutely give us a good start, you know. And, you know, when we start to talk about Aboriginal issues, the first thing that comes up in conversations, whether it's my next-door neighbour, in my office, out there in the community, it's about, yes, but, you know, there's only 600,000 Aboriginal people and you get all this money from the government. Hmm. And I said, yes, all that special treatment, inverted commas, has shown us how far we've come. Look how far we've got to go. Have a look around and who's doing really well out of this country and who's not doing so well. More than likely, Aboriginal people still fall the other side of the statistics, you know, and we'll talk through those issues today. But the referendum week, the sorry day, you know, the times in NAIDOC week, when we get our country just to reflect and have a look at what's happened to your Aboriginal brother and sister in your community, and just, you know, build your relationship, build your knowledge, and don't be the ones who sort of have another attitude, a negative attitude towards us. And, you know, whether we're going for jobs or we're going for accommodation or we turn up to schools, it's just like we are always trying to sort of break through that door for equality. And I think even in my time, I'm 55 years of age, I've struggled through our life for that equality. And we're still doing it today. And that is just the sad reality of our life in our country. But it's not the burden we carry. It's an encouragement, really, that we don't give up, because people from the past, particularly our Christian leaders from the past, who went into our communities and tried to lift us up in many ways, lift us up so that we won't feel downtrodden. You know, my great grandparents from the past that I was able to learn from, the burden they carried, because they can see the disadvantage and the brokenness in our local community, it was so obvious to them that there was a way out. Even from the most remotest community in Western New South Wales, my great grandparents made it their number one goal that children from my generation would not only be born in hospitals, but they will also get an education.
Yeah.
And that is why I will never give up. I'll never give up, because there's always hope.
There is always hope. And I think from your perspective, from the regional existence to the city existence, what do you see as being some of the things that are causing Aboriginal populations to not have the same opportunity as others get?
I think racism is absolutely needs to be talked about. It's not something that we should just put in, put under a rock. If we bring a racism and when I talk racism, I'm talking about it in the real terms, that you'll see Aboriginal people as the other sort of people, a separate part of our society. And it needs to be confronted. Now, when you front up to for jobs, because without a job in this country, and we've just seen this during the COVID crisis, that how many people lost their jobs and were unable to work, and we've called it a national crisis. Hmm. And what happened was the government then came in with a stimulus package to try and respond to that. Well, what we've been saying from our perspective, if you look through our lens, we've had the same crisis for however many generations, and there has just been day in, day out, year in, year out, it's just been a pandemic. And if you just throw money at the problem, you'll never be able to address the fundamentals. And what we're talking about here is that the care and concern and the respect for Aboriginal people hasn't been there. Mm. It's been a monetary response, just like a stimulus package in response to the problem, and hope that money will actually heal all the wounds and people will just get on with it. And as an Aboriginal person growing up in Western New South Wales, that's what people have told us, just get on with it.
Mm.
It's not that simple. It's not that simple when you front up for a job and you get treated differently, or you front up for accommodation and you need to go through some other process because someone's treating you unfairly. And these things, I'm not just talking about Laura as somebody else's experience. I'm sharing with you, mate, because these have been my experience. I'm a professional man. I've been educated. I've had the opportunity to play rugby league in Sydney. I've seen a little bit of the world, and I still get treated like that in my adult life. And, you know, so these are experiences that we don't want our children to experience.
Right.
So we try and work harder with those different levels of our community, particularly in the employment sector or in the accommodation sector, that do not treat our people like this.
It's a real cultural change that's required.
It's like everybody else is accepted except this small group of people called Aboriginal people, and we're set over there when we're continually trying to break into our society for equality. And that is a sad, stark reality of today's time.
Mm.
And all of us, including you and I, we have a responsibility to continually to break that down. I don't see it as a burden to carry. I just see it that's another barrier that I must work hard. I must have a positive attitude. I must carry myself professionally, have a care and concern for my people, and be conscious that I am a role model. I need to understand the role model status that I do carry, for both as a father and a grandfather, but also as a community leader in everything I do. And when I read about some of those leaders of the past, like William Ferguson, who in Dubbo has a bronze statue on his memorial because he was such an historic figure in the 30s that stood on a street corner and said, "Australia, you need to be concerned about my people." You know what, Laura? You know what, Laura? Isn't it sad that we're still confronting these things in our time?
Yeah.
It's really sad when you send someone for a job and they get treated, you know, they have the qualifications, the skills and the background, or you send someone to get places to live with their families that they have to fight through a system to get treated differently, and that can be demoralising. It can be demoralising, and I think this is why it's so encouraging for Christians to understand that we need your prayer, we need your love, we need your concern, because this group of people that are not afforded the same level of respect in our country, and as a Christian man, it's possibly the thing that breaks my heart the most. Mm. And I know that that's where my focus is, and that's why I've dedicated my life as a professional adult to work in community affairs, so that we can get people to say, I need my kids to be educated. I'm not going to give up. I want my kids to sort of bite their own arms. We're not going to give up. And don't just throw it all in, because it's another generation that we might need to fight through, or it's the generation after that. Well, we don't know when the fight will stop. And I call it a fight because that is, in many ways, is a descriptive of how I sort of visualise it, that I'm continually trying to struggle through, and I need to always push. And it might not be the best term, but it's the one that describes this struggle to get Aboriginal people to be seen differently in our community. And we as Christians, I think, have got that responsibility to help.
Why does that make you so emotional? Is it just that it's still such a fight and it's still happening now?
Yes, it is. Every day of the week. Every day of the week. And people might say, you know, this type of struggle is a thing of the past. And when we talk about William Ferguson, you know, and there's many others that have gone through this struggle to get this equality, to see that we have got a place in our society, we need to be respected to manage our own affairs, and we've got the education and we've got the wherewithal to make the most impact. Just to get that, it's still a struggle. It absolutely is a fight. And you can look at all the data that reflects where we still are being treated very differently in this country, and whether it's in the judicial system, in the family care system, in the health system, and certainly in the education system, where absolutely Aboriginal people are so far beyond the eight ball and are being treated differently.
It's so true, and I realise with iProud you're doing something incredible, where you're not only making a difference from your own perspective, but you're choosing to ensure that young people have opportunities and that they don't grow up with an attitude that is divisive to, you know, people around them as well. Can you give us a little bit of an understanding of what you do at iProud and how it came to be?
Yeah, so iProud is a program that focuses on training and developing Aboriginal people to give them a chance to achieve their dream goal of joining New South Wales Police. That's the front end. The bottom end of iProud is about building the relationships between Aboriginal people and New South Wales Police. And for anybody with half a brain, you would know very clearly that historically and currently, there is no relationship. And from the past, it was very bad. And so when my sister died in police custody in 1997 in Brewarrina, where we have born and raised, it's our little community in western New South Wales where everybody knows everybody. And my sister dies in police custody. And if you know anything about death in custody, you'd know that in 1987, there was a death in custody in our small community as well, in the same police station. So that's what's happened in western New South Wales. And we know right across our country, we've got what we would call in our community an absolute epidemic of deaths in custody. And even today, 2021, there's still Aboriginal people dying in police custody when we know it's preventable. And so what iProud is about actually going to the pointy end of the spear and saying that we need Aboriginal people in New South Wales Police. There is no backdoor opportunity to join police just for Aboriginal people. We're going through the front door. We're going through with and equipping Aboriginal people, particularly young people, and putting them in give them an opportunity to be wearing that blue uniform. And then what happens then is that you do something amazing with our community. When grandparents and great-grandparents have such a historic poor relationship, Then they see their loved ones joining New South Wales Police. Mm. Something happens in that family. And then when you start to get a number of people working through this process in the New South Wales Police, they also see it differently. They see that they really need to have these Aboriginal people working in their teams so they better police Aboriginal communities. And through that process, the goal is to drive down crime. The drive is to have better engagement, better policing that drives down crime. So the equation is simple. Less people going in custody, less opportunity to die in custody. And so it's long term, it's hard work, there's no quick fix. Everybody in the past have been looking for what can we do to fix it overnight. It's not an overnight fix. And well, so the iProud program has been going now for well over 10 years, and it's all over New South Wales. It trains hundreds of Aboriginal people joining New South Wales Police. So today, you know, in our station here in Dubbo, there's many of our people who've gone through that program working in our community. So I could more than likely go down the street and run into a police officer that's come through the iProud program.
Wow.
Then
wow.
For our people, that's an amazing experience when they walk and shake hands with police officers from their community, you know, working in their community. And that special relationship that happens within our own community when we see Aboriginal people as police officers, teachers, nurses, and so on. And that is fundamentally what this is about. It's about shifting the dial. Instead of sitting back here complaining about how bad this relationship is, let's try and do something positive. And I know that in my family, it's something we all did, because we could have quite easily had a different approach when my sister Fiona died in police custody.
Mm.
We had a different response. It's a tragic, tragic affair. I carry it every day because there's only four children in my family. I was the eldest. She's the only girl. And my mum died early, so I was raised as the eldest in the family with a different level of responsibility. And when I lost her at 28, she had four children, four little kids. It's a tragic, tragic affair, and I could have had a different response as the family leader. But I'm so happy that the Lord had called me to do something very special in my life, and that was the time I needed Him most. And this is the legacy now called iProud.
Yeah, what you do is such inspiring work, and I think it also is so important for people to realise that behind all of the different stories we hear of discrimination, racism, or the sadness of a death in custody, it's real people, it's real families, there's real impact to every single decision that's being made. And as we wrap up this conversation, Peter, I wonder, as a man of faith and as somebody who has found motivation and focus from that in the work that you do, what would you say the role of Christian men and women is in this conversation around reconciliation and around bringing healing where there's not at the moment?
I absolutely understand that forgiveness can only come from Christ. I struggled in those first couple of years, mate, after my sister died, and I wasn't saved at the time, and I was struggling with my faith. I grew up in a Christian environment because on my mother's side, Christianity came down through my grandmother to my mother and my aunties and so on. And so I started to understand more about what forgiveness meant, and I really then knew what I needed to do as a family leader. But it was also killing me as well, Laura. You know, I was so bound up anger, frustration, that my sister could die in custody after all the things I thought this country was doing to prevent deaths in custody. I then understood what I needed to do, that I needed to forgive New South Wales Police and come to that point. But it was only through that process did I understand that, you know what, I can do more. I can do more. I can say, I forgive you. But they said sorry to me, to my father, to my family, for a tragic death. And I had to come to that point of forgiveness. And so I don't know if even people who are Christians really understand the power of forgiveness. And I think we just sometimes just throw it out there. And we have unforgiveness in our own lives, every one of us. And it could be against a family member. It could be like this racism issue. It's why and how I get through this. And in many ways, this is what we all struggle with. So as Christians, first of all, I'd love the Christians to really pray for us. Pray for your Aboriginal brothers and sisters. Don't just sit back and say it's their problem, they need to get over it, the government's looking after them. You pray for them.
Yeah.
The other part is that you'd get to know people. Don't just stand back and watch in your country or in your community, maybe in your street, that I know Aboriginal people, but I want to see them from a distance. Mm. I want to challenge Christians to get involved in the Aboriginal community, and you can only do that by building relationship. And from building relationship, you build an understanding, and from that, who knows, you could lead people to faith.
Yeah.
And so there is such an opportunity for us to make an impact in people's lives, just like William Ferguson, Christian man in the 30s, standing on a street corner, you know, pleading for assistance, pleading for people to open their eyes. Well, what I'm doing here today is asking people to open their eyes, see it for what it is, that Aboriginal people really need your love, care and concern. And as Christians, we should take the leadership on that. We don't wait for somebody else to do that. We can actually make an impact by getting to know, getting involved in, and in many ways leading the way for that love, because there's no other love like the Lord's love.
Yeah, your words today, Peter, are just so encouraging. So thank you so much for your time. We'll have to end it there, but I do really appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you very much, Laura. Much appreciated.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.